Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Knowledge Check. I am one of your hosts, Philip, and I'm on my own tonight. So last time, Eric did a solo episode because I was unavailable. He accused me of just being playing Destiny, but that's not exactly true. Anyway, Eric, I'm going to say, is lounging in a hammock drinking lemonade in his backyard. And that's why he is not here to record. He's just a lazy guy. So anyway, it's just me tonight. And so I'm going to be doing the same thing that Eric did last week and discuss some of my inspirations as a DM and as a player, and hopefully just provide you some insight into the way I think, since you got some into the way that Eric thinks last episode. And perhaps a little insight into the way that I build characters. For those of you who have been listening to Eberron Renewed, I'll talk a little bit about some of my inspiration for Beric, alas, you know. And maybe a little bit of inspiration for how I'm going about building my next character. So to start with, as a GM, I always say GM instead of DM because I play a lot of different systems, so... my inspirations are, you know, similar to Eric's. I get a lot of inspiration from mythology. Eric and I like a lot of the same books. Lord of the Rings, obviously. I think it's pretty hard to be a fantasy gamer and not have at least some affection for Lord of the Rings. I want to put out Dune, which Eric didn't call out, but if you like intrigue at all, that's probably the foundational work for the sort of intrigue sci-fi fantasy setting. I guarantee there would not be a Game of Thrones if there had not been a Dune first. Another book that I would mention to sort of play off of Eric's discussion of mythology is Beowulf. Beowulf has a wonderful structure for an adventure. In fact, in my One Ring campaign early on, I literally just ran Beowulf as an adventure. The players were wandering along the Anduin Vale between Mirkwood and the Misty Mountains in Wilderland, set in Tolkien's Middle-earth, and they began to hear rumors of this creature that had been attacking homesteads in the area, and the trail eventually led them to this hall up in the mountains where I had them meet the chieftain, Hrothgar, and he... explained the trouble where he was being attacked constantly by this monster every night, and they agreed to wait overnight in the hall as bait and fight the monster. And it was somewhere in there that they realized what was happening. Like, they could tell I was just running Beowulf, and they thought it was awesome. They didn't think it was cheesy. They weren't disappointed that they knew the story. They thought it was great. So don't be afraid to take familiar plots and make them your own, make them fit into your story. I find that when my players realize that I'm doing that, it's not usually a disappointment to them, often quite the opposite. So those are some of the books that inspire me. I am not a wrestling fan, so I don't take anything from that, but I thought Eric's discussion of that was really interesting last week. Another place that I pull a lot from is film and television. There's a lot of really great ensemble TV shows like Firefly or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which kind of lost me a little eventually, but the idea is still there. In fact, one of my friends and I were discussing how to start a campaign, and I pointed out the idea of starting it like in the episode of Firefly. There's an episode of Firefly where the crew are captured by the Federation. And the majority of the episode is a series of cuts of them being interrogated, them being interviewed by the officer who's captured their ship, essentially. And you learn a whole bunch of the background of how the characters got to where they are by them being interviewed by this policeman, essentially. And he thought that was such a good idea that when we started our next campaign, he actually opened it that way. There had been an incident, and our characters were arrested or taken in for questioning. We weren't exactly arrested. We hadn't done anything wrong. But we were interrogated, and in that way, we were forced to improvise on the spot how we knew everyone else and also give a deeper look into who our characters were. So that was a really cool mechanic for introducing characters that we drew straight from a TV show we both liked. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like Firefly, is a pretty good sort of mission of the week kind of story. And so if you like the monster of the week mechanic where your story is very episodic rather than a big, grand, epic campaign, both of those have a really good structure to them. And that works really well for that kind of story. One film that I was actually talking to my wife about this tonight, one film that works really well as a D&D campaign, and I should say here that being a DM causes me to look at most storytelling through that lens and consider how would I make that a good D&D campaign. And one of the stories that I thought that worked really well as this was Rogue One. And part of this was a joke to me because it worked a lot like a table does at an RPG. You start off with these three characters. They all have a really clear reason for being where they are. You've got Jin and Cassian and their droid who, that's so bad. I feel K2. There we go. I thought I'd forgotten his name. And K2. And all of them have a really strong reason for being where they are. And they make up a great little core of a party. And a lot of times, you know, you start off just the GM and a handful of players, three players. And then you get in a little ways, and then somebody's friend wants to join in. And so you've got a pair of players who want to come and join in. So you need to come up with an excuse for them to be a part of the story. And one of them really wants to play a Jedi, but you're like, well, we're in the wrong part of the Star Wars history for that. So why don't you be force sensitive and kind of a ninja instead of a Jedi? He's like, oh, yeah, I can totally go with that. And the other guy just wants a big gun. And so you make them pals. They've known each other forever. They've worked together. And they're, you know, they'll join in because they don't like the Empire. They don't have the same kind of connection to the mission that your original three do. But they have aligned goals, and so they'll come along. And then you get, you know, someone else who wants to join in, and you kind of have to create a character for them. Well, they need a pilot. You know, they none of them really have that skill, and it's caused some problems in the past. So they really just need someone who's a really good pilot. So you get someone who'll create a pilot, and that's your last player. Also notable that they all die after splitting the party. but that's sort of the way that I look at storytelling now tends to be through the lens of an RPG. So I draw a lot from film and television, and I have definitely played out episodes of TV shows that I liked on my gaming table. And that's been great. It works really well. You take the structure, you take away all the proper nouns and make them fit your world, and then it's fine. There's not anything wrong with that. So another place that I draw an inspiration from as a GM is from other GMs. I watch, you know, I'm sure many of you watch Critical Role, or you've watched some of the Penny Arcade Acquisitions Incorporated games, or Matt Colville. So from guys like Mercer and Perkins and Colville, I really pick up a lot of techniques. I really love Mercer's thing. I know he's not likely the first person to do this, but when someone scores a killing blow, scores the last hit on a big monster, he has them describe the kill. He doesn't do it for them. He says, you know, how do you want to kill this guy? And that's a really fun mechanic, and I've started doing that at my table, and it works really well. Chris Perkins, in his blog posts for Wizards back during 4th edition, talked a lot about the importance of a good recap. And I really drew a lot from that and started doing that at my table, and it worked really well. So taking inspiration from other people who run games is great. And, you know, sometimes they'll do something and you'll try it and it just doesn't work with your group the way it does with theirs. And that's fine. But don't be, you know, don't be afraid to do that. And, you know, GMs don't mind that either, you know, copying them. I know Matt Mercer obviously has gotten a lot of celebrity through through a Critical Role. And I know he had some people ask if they minded that they had taken his how do you want to do this moment at the end of Big Fights. And, you know, his expression was, you know, why would I mind? I mean, this is more people playing the game. And, you know, so take stuff from the GMs that you like, whether they be people, whether they be people who have run games for you in the past, or they be people you've seen running games on YouTube or listened to on podcasts. Steal ideas from other GMs. GMs don't mind that stuff. We want more people playing the game. That's all we're really about. Art is another one. When I find a great piece of fantasy art or just a piece of art that really is evocative to me, I will save it somewhere on my phone or on my computer and use it to design a location. I mentioned this when we did the discussion of the last arc of the campaign I've been running, that I'd found this piece of art of an adventurer kneeling on the edge of a gigantic crater in which there was a ruined city. I've got that on my computer and I've been waiting for the opportunity to create a location around it because it's just such a fantastic piece of art. And I'll use that in my games at my table as I'll pull out pieces of art to show my players what a character looks like or what a location looks like in a way that the map, because I use minis at my table, that the map and the minis might not get across if I've got something better or I'm using a mini as kind of a stand-in because I don't have just the right one. I'll pull out a piece of art and show it to the players. I think that really helps immerse them into it. And by taking the piece of art and using it as the inspiration for a location that I want to build into my campaign, it takes a lot of the impetus off of me. I don't have to start from nothing and work out the shape of this town or this temple. I've got that. I just have to populate it and translate it into D&D or whatever system terms. And that works well with fantasy art. That works well with real world locations. I've got a book by Osprey Publishing of Celtic hill forts. And in my One Ring campaign, anytime they go up on a settlement that's like fortified, I will pull out a picture from that book or use a diagram of an old Celtic hill fort from that book to design this hill fort that they're going near, because that's the right sort of time period for Middle Earth and the right feel for it. So I use that a lot as well. So real world locations and real world, you know, historical locations are a great opportunity, especially if you're in a modern game or even a sci-fi game, pulling just layouts of real towns is really easy. I ran a one shot set in the Destiny universe from the video game, and the characters went somewhere I didn't quite expect them to, and they ended up in this ruined town square. And I just didn't have a good map for that. I didn't have a good picture of what it needed to look like. So I literally pulled up the downtown square area of the town that I live in, that I currently live in. And I just pulled it up on Google Maps, turned it onto satellite view, expanded it to look as big as I needed it to, and just set it on the table so that they could see that that was where we were. And that worked really well. And they really had a good time with it because a lot of them live in the same town as me. And so they had a really good time with it and thinking about the, you know, they were having a gunfight through the ruins of this or that restaurant or this or that shop or the old courthouse building. So that worked really well as well. So real world locations are a great place to draw inspiration from for designing locations and settings in your game. So I draw a lot of art. So, you know, as a GM, I tend towards allowing the players a lot of freedom to decide where they're going to go. I will put them on a theme park ride occasionally, but for the most part, I like to let them decide. So it requires a lot of improvisation. And that's probably why I have all of the, why I do this so often, is that I don't have the improvisational ability to usually create a location or an encounter or a mission just straight out of my head. But if I have an idea from a TV show or a film or a book, if I can pull the structure, the basic skeleton from that, then I can, fill it out pretty well through improvisation. It takes a lot of the pressure off and allows me to focus more on doing good role playing with my players and running a good combat encounter with them or something like that. So it frees up my creativity for the actual playing rather than for the creating the location. So that's kind of my inspiration area as a DM. As a player, I really like storytelling as a character. And so I really like to try and stay as true to my character as possible and role play and be in character as much as possible. This is why I tend to use a voice. I tend to create a voice for the character because it pulls me out of me and into the character. And as much as possible, I try to create a voice that's distinct enough from mine that I'm not going to just slide back into talking like me. So, hence Beric's Irish accent. If you're Irish and you've been listening to this, I apologize. I'm sure my accent is not great. It's one of the better accents that I do, and so I've done that. I haven't decided what the voice is going to be like for my next character. I've been working on that, but trying to decide on an accent or a different tone, something that will make it distinct from me so that I can be drawn in when I start using that voice. And I find that really, really helpful. And it doesn't have to be an accent. If you don't do accents or you don't do voices well, it can be some kind of mannerism of speech. You can have a way that he starts or she starts all of her sentences, a way that you, certain slang that you use that real life you doesn't, but your character does. Stuff like that can create character for you. So I like to be in character as much as possible, but I'm also a big lover of the mechanics. I really like building characters. A lot of times I'm always torn between the desire to try something new and my enjoyment of the slow and gradual development of my character. Obviously, with Beric, things took a turn and I got a little less choice in that moment, although obviously everything resulted from choices that we made at the table. But I'm always about half tempted to retire characters because I just enjoy building them so much. But I love developing them and seeing them grow. And that obviously is a little more rewarding than just building something new, trying it out. I have occasionally deliberately gotten my character into a situation that was going to get him killed in other games. And I almost always regret it. It's usually results in me wishing I was still playing that character or wondering, man, what would that character have done in this situation? So I try not to do that much anymore. I did that a lot earlier as a gamer. So I don't do that much anymore, but still, the loss of a character, or if you come to a place where it just makes sense for the character to retire, I don't mind doing that at all because I enjoy building a new character. So I'm kind of always torn between the story aspect and the mechanics. Finding mechanics I want to play is really important to me because, well, that's what you're doing. You are playing a game. So usually what I'll do is I will start with the concept of who the character is, why they're an adventurer, why they would leave home, what motivates them. And then a concept. A game that does a really good job of encouraging character creation in this sort is Fate, because the first thing you decide in Fate is a high concept. So you might be trying to design Indiana Jones, and so you are a tomb raiding archaeology professor. Or you're going to be Han Solo, just stick with the Harrison Ford theme, I guess. then you're a scoundrel with a heart of gold or something like that, or a good-hearted scoundrel. Yeah, I don't know. Probably a better one. But just a brief statement that sums up the character in some way. So I try to start with something like that, and I honestly, I can't remember what I came up with for Beric at the beginning. I started with something like that. I tend to try to make it as simple as possible. And then I go and I entirely separately work out what mechanics I want to use. And then the act of creating the personality of the character, for me, is the art of merging those two, of taking the person I want to play and matching it with the mechanics I want to play. I will often draw the personality part from a book character. So Beric, for example, there's a wonderful fantasy novel called Under Heaven by Guy Gavriel Kay. It's a low magic fantasy set in a setting that's based heavily on 7th century China. So the character I borrowed from that is the protagonist of the book, who is, and I won't ruin anything here, when the book opens, he's staying at this valley up in the mountains where his father, a famous general, fought a terrible, terrible battle. And he's just been burying the bones. So my initial pitch to Eric was that that's what Beric was doing. We were out on that edge of Breland, and there's a battle at Margul Pass in the mountains that separate Breland from Dargoon, where Uruk Rowan fought. And so my original pitch to Eric was actually to have Beric doing that. And then we talked about it a while and kind of concluded that we would just sort of leave that in the background, see if it ever came up. And it may yet. And instead start with Beric having settled into a community. But the point was that what you had was an aristocratic young man whose family won their aristocracy rather than being born to it. An aristocratic family that's earned their aristocracy rather than always having it. And the young man, Beric in this case, has left that life. Tay in the book has left that life to go and honor his father through this act in this valley, and is pulled out of that life by the plot. I took that basic idea and decided that eventually Beric had meant to return home, but instead landed in Mistmarsh, which is not very far from the Margul Pass. And so Beric is there basically avoiding any responsibilities he has to his family at home. He's a little bit distant because with the death of his mother, he's no longer got a real relation to her husband or to his half-brother, with whom he has sort of distant relations. And the idea of the runaway, the aristocratic runaway who doesn't want to be a part of that world, appealed to me. And so that was what I kind of settled on with Beric. So I knew he was going to be intelligent. I knew he was going to be cultured. It helped having a character who had a lot of reason to be aware of Brelish politics and court matters, because I, as a player, am really well aware of those things, because I just love the lore of Eberron. And so picking character had an excuse to know those things prevented me from, well, it saved me the trouble of having to separate my knowledge from Beric's knowledge as much as possible. So I started with that concept, and then I started looking at mechanics. And I had gotten to play a warlock briefly a few times, and I really liked it. And I like the idea of a magic and melee mix character. So I settled pretty quickly on wanting to play a warlock. I knew Beric worshipped the Silver Flame. And then it was a matter of sort of just working out which kind of warlock he was. And the Celestial Warlock was out, and that made a lot of sense. Like, that honestly, that fit the Silver Flame just perfectly. But I really liked the sound of the Hexblade, because it played again into that melee fighter magic user kind of idea. So I really wanted to play that, despite the whole Silver Flame thing. So me and Eric talked about it, and we worked out that there's some kind of pact with his father, through his father, that's come down to him, and that's how he gets his pact, rather than coming from the power that he worships. So I took this book character, and I attached it to mechanics that I liked, and then I worked out how they were joined. And I think it worked really well, because I really enjoyed the conflict in Beric between the very altruistic teachings of the Silver Flame and the kind of dark and a little bit disturbing power that he was wielding. So that's one way that I'll build a character. Another way is sometimes, so at my table and most of the games that I play in at my home, we use a lot of minis. Eric doesn't. Eric likes to use Theater of the Mind more. And obviously when we're recording, Eric's very Theater of the Mind, but I like minis and I use them at my table when I run games, and the GMs that I play with down at my home also do. I have often, in recent years especially, found a mini I really like, and I'm kind of picky about miniatures looking as close as possible to the way that the player wants the character to look. And so I'll spend a lot of time when I'm building a mini for someone, modding it or painting it. I had to do a little bit of modding for the Draconis mini that I got Trevor before he left. And so one way that I save myself some trouble is I'll find a mini and just design the character based on the mini. Use the weapons that the mini has, build his class as much as possible, the way the mini looks. And so that's another way that I'll draw inspiration for building a character and save myself some trouble, because I just let the mini do the driving. And it, you know, I like collecting minis, I like painting minis, and so it feeds into some other areas of my hobby. So obviously that wasn't what I did with Beric, as we weren't using minis, but I've done that a lot at home. And obviously that won't be what I'm doing with my new character. I'm kind of looking at a few different concepts for the new character. One of them, Eric and I have been playing a lot of Destiny 2, and in that I play a Night Stalker Hunter, so I've been thinking about trying to build one of those with D&D mechanics. I haven't quite worked out how to do it yet. I don't know if it's like a ranger or an arcane archer or like a warlock with a bunch of the stuff you can do with Eldritch Blast that slows enemies and pushes enemies and pulls enemies and that sort of thing. So I've been looking at some of that. But that's mostly on the mechanics side. I'm still working on the personality side. So I like to, yeah, that's kind of how I think about building characters and how I go about it. So again, this was a fairly short episode, like Eric's episode, but hopefully next week he and I will be able to work out our schedules so that we can record a normal episode, as his, you know, general laziness and not actually being busy at all, just being lazy, wears off, and we're able to get back together and go back to our regular format. So I hope you've enjoyed these sort of solo episodes. I guess if you did and you want to see more of them on different topics, we'd be happy to hear it in the comments and on feedback. So you can find us all over the internet at the Geek Pantheon, at our website, thegeekpantheon.com, and on all the various forms of social media that you might use as the Geek Pantheon. So feel free to get in touch with us there. And once again, thank you for listening. I'm Philip, and I'll talk to you next time.